Well, welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Michael Puente. Today, while it's no longer in the headlines, the crisis on the U.S.-Mexico border continues. We'll talk to one Northwest Indiana resident who's trying to help asylum seekers who are stuck on the Mexican side of the border. We'll see how the Chicago Bears are preparing for their trip across the pond and if the Chicago Cubs have a new manager yet. And we'll talk with the organizers of the Gary International Black Film Festival and one of the filmmakers and a local man who wants to get more Latinos involved in improv. Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Michael Puente. Brand new show on Lakeshore Public Radio. We're going to get right into it. Well, are you feeling miserable? Well, I hope you don't, but the magazine Business Insider listed the 50 most miserable cities in America. And guess what? Gary is ranked number one. But not far behind is Hammond at number two. Not flattering at all, but how does this area push back on something like that? True or not, do articles like this hurt Gary and the rest of Northwest Indiana's chances of luring companies to this area? Joining me to discuss this unflattering designation are Katie Curley, who is a Gary resident and principal at Still City Academy, and Don Kolobowski is with the Lake County Indiana Economic Alliance. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, let me start off with you, Katie. You live in Gary and you work in Gary, correct?
I do.
So when you hear about this designation, how does that make you feel? And do you think it's accurate?
I think this designation and this title could not be more further away from my lived experience of a resident. And I think it's a dangerous narrative and single story to continue to perpetuate. I've been working here for 12 years, living here for five, and have the honor and privilege of being a principal of 450 young people in this city. And at a school, Steel City Academy, where one of our core elements is about deepening the pride in this community and our active roles in being the change agents. And I think headlines like this, stories like this, take us away from where our efforts should be, which is continuing to do the hard work to make this place incredible and beautiful, which we know it is at the core elements.
I mean, we all know that Gary has its issues, unemployment, depopulation, loss of industry jobs. But, you know, you have a national lakeshore, you have a minor league ballpark. Is this something that do you think your students at Still City Academy are going to learn about, or are they going to find out about this? And how would a parent or even a teacher explain this to them? Nobody wants to live in the most miserable city.
Right. So at Steel City Academy, we're tackling this head on. Our students have read this article. One of the incredible things about our model is we have a program called Gear and Flame Week. So it's the last week of every quarter, and we throw out our traditional school schedule and instead bring and invite community partners in to lead courses that ignite a passion and an interest. So we have community partners leading a course about this article, and our students making action plans and community capstone projects to continue to redefine that narrative and what their role is in showing the world and telling the story that Gary is far from a miserable city. Instead, has a ton of natural assets, including the most important one, the people that make this place so special.
Well, I was actually really hesitant to even tackle this as a subject because, you know, I try to reach out to the reporters who did this story. We don't know the criteria they kind of used. They used a lot of data, but some of it seems very subjective. I'm not sure if they even visited Gary. I'm sure they didn't visit all the 50 most miserable places to get their data from or write their story. So, but unfortunately, a story like this, you know, it's picked up everywhere. It's reported everywhere. So you can't ignore it, even though you try to reach out to the reporters to at least talk to them about it. Now, Don Kolobowski, you work with a group that is in the business of trying to lure companies to Northwest Indiana, to Lake County specifically. How does an article like this impact your efforts?
Well, it's a negative brand, and people pick up on it, and the media just continues to roll, and others just capitalize on that particular study or article. So it's not favorable, but from a business attracting business standpoint and a site selection criteria standpoint, this will be ignored. It's a read and drop, because there are criteria that companies and consultants look at when locating a business and creating private investment. And so for us, I did read the report once I spoke with you, because I pretty much ignored it through all the other media and social media and things. But they use U.S. Census data from 2014 to 2017. Our organization doesn't even use U.S. Census data. It's aged, and it's very inaccurate. The Lake County and Economic Alliance pays for a data resource company out of California called GIS Planning, Data Planning, through a process called Zoom Prospector. So we provide many data sets to companies when they're going through the site selection process, and none of them include miserable or anything. They're really true data sets, but they're also updated quarterly and have multiple data sources that list those sources, and we provide that sources with the data. So when you have access to data, you can complete a story, and it can end whatever way you want the story to end. And I think this was just pretty much, I hate to use this in your presence, Michael.
Sure.
Fake news.
Well, I don't like using that term either, but maybe we're like ultra sensitive because we want to be protective of Gary. But let's face it, even if you don't live in Gary, when they're saying this, and they're also attaching the city of Hammond to this too, they're actually saying, well, kind of all of Northwest Indiana, mm-hmm. whether you're in Valpo, in Lowell, we're kind of all in this together. Because if that article impacts a company coming here, well, then the person who needs a job who lives in Lowell or Maryville, Munster, and they were going to set up shop in Gary or Hammond, that does impact their future employment. So, again, when you're dealing with a company looking to come to Lake County, whether it's Gary, Chicago, Hammond, they got to know. I'm sure they've done their due diligence. They know this is an industrial area. They know it may even be parts of it depressed in terms of socioeconomic status, things like that. But they know there's a workforce here. So when this article came out, Don, do you actually go into sort of how are we going to fight back against this?
No, we totally ignored it. In fact, Michael, until you brought it to my attention yesterday, I actually never even read the article. I don't read those social media points because they really don't make a difference. We're working with companies every day. There is strong interest in our urban sector of Lake County, Indiana. Majority of our leads and companies that are looking to relocate or expand are looking at Gary, Hammond, East Chicago, and that sector they're surrounding the lake. We know we look at opportunities, but we provide real data sets based on site selection criteria. Companies don't use words like miserable or depressed. They use challenged and distressed, but then they end up with it equals opportunity. And so most companies, when they're coming and looking at Lake County, Indiana, or Northwest Indiana, or Indiana in a whole, they're doing that for market accessibility. They're doing it for workforce, education, attainment levels, taxation, pro-business climates, cost of real estate, average labor wages. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at a lot of other criteria, not for stories like that.
So you don't think when you're approaching a business owner and you're in negotiations and they're saying, hey, look, we're looking to set up a shop on Fifth Avenue or somewhere on Broadway. Oh, by the way, we just saw Business Insider. What can you tell us about this?
And I can actually speak to it now because I read the article. That was based on U.S. Census data. If you have any concerns with any of that data that was set, we'll redo a data set. We also have access to utilize it's GIS based. So we could take the city of Gary and pinpoint a location. We did this for TMB Tube that we attracted to Gary, Indiana, on a vacant piece of property that's spent over $14 million and have 350 workers in the city of Gary, Indiana. So there are opportunities, but we take what's called a heat map. We could pinpoint an address, and we can do a 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, and that can extend across state lines. Of course, we do have one beautiful feature that cuts that a feature, and that's Lake Michigan. So when you look at real criteria, but you look at highway access, Lake Michigan, access to market, access to amenities like the city of Chicago. Gary's in a great place. It's time to not run, but stay and rebuild.
Now, Katie, being in education, you're dealing with children every day. They're looking at, it was just hot the other day, and they just came off from, it's already October. It felt like it was just summer. And they're probably thinking about Halloween and all the things they want to do for the weekend. You know, can this kind of, you know, make kids depressed if they read that, you know, their area is miserable?
I think if, as educators, it is our role to surface these articles and really deconstruct that this is a single story being told of their community, and provide them opportunities to reframe and redefine what that story is. But I think if we as educators don't take these opportunity to have these conversations, it is really easy for our young people to internalize this as a sense of their identity and their worth as being somebody from Gary, and taking that from a negative connotation. And so it is our work as educators and as people who mentor our young people to redefine what the story of Gary is, and to provide our kids as active members in redefining that story. And that's what we do every single day.
So when you go home and you're going to be spending time this weekend, I hope you're not miserable, but what are some of the things you do in Gary or Hammond that you think would rebuff or refute this being the most miserable area?
Great. So one of the things that our kids and our staff and my friends and community partners that I work with closely is taking this opportunity to do a social media campaign and retell this story. So we've started a hashtag #MyGary or hashtag #ThisIsMyGary and share pictures of experiences and places that is the true Gary that we know. So whether that's taking a walk and watching this beautiful sunrise that we had on Lake Michigan, whether that is frequenting some of the incredible businesses and restaurants on Lake Street, whether that is coming to Steel City on Thursday afternoons for citywide youth flag football, it is a completely different Gary, nowhere near a miserable experience, but one that is fulfilling and hopeful, and brings immense amount of joy.
Don, when you're traveling through Lake County this weekend, I don't know where you're heading, maybe Gary, maybe Hammond, what are the things you're doing that you think would go against this miserable tag?
My wife and I are empty nesters, so our weekends are busier than our week. And so we're, you know, we have church festivals, we have festivals on the lake, we have so many opportunities to dine whatever we want to dine at. Nobody looks at you differently because of your color here. We all get along. We're all used to the cultural mixes, and I'm not afraid to go anywhere in Lake County, Indiana. I see the positives, and I'm very encouraged by our principal here, because that's exactly what we need to build up our kids, educate them, make them proud of where they're at, and create opportunities. My job is to create opportunities for them so they can get educated or trained and get employed and raise their families and stay and rebuild Lake County, Indiana.
Well, we're going to leave it right there. Don Kalibowski and Katie Curley, thank you so much for joining me here. Coming up, the crisis at the border and a local woman's efforts to help asylum seekers.
Coming up on the Friday Pitch-In, we'll hear from reporter Justin Hicks on a new apprenticeship program in Elkhart County geared toward high school students. We'll also talk to historian Annalisa Cox on a fascinating but forgotten piece of Indiana history. Her recent New York Times opinion piece is titled, When Anti-Immigration Meant Keeping Out Black Pioneers. We'll also catch up on the biggest Indiana stories of the week with our digital editor, Lauren Chapman. Next time on All In.
Tune in today at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Let's travel to Pepe's with Let's Eat. Pepe's has been in the Maryville area for 40 years now, so let's visit the cantina and talk with owner and operator Adam Espinoza and his manager Laura Hickman. Tune in to explore the inner workings of one of the best Mexican cuisines in the area. Call in 769-9577 and join us as we sample those tasty tacos. Ask our guests about their secrets, tricks, and what makes their food so delicious. And win a gift card from Pepe's out of Maryville. Tune in to Let's Eat with Jose and me, Chef Nick, this Friday at 3 o'clock on 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. WLPR. Call in and join the fun. Yasu!
La Divina, tiene
Well, welcome back to Off Mic with me, Michael Puente, on Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, right now the news out of Washington is all about the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. While the attention is there, a few weeks ago, all eyes were on the U.S.-Mexico border. Currently, as it stands, those seeking asylum must do it from Mexico, not in the United States. That's leaving hundreds of men, women, and children stranded in Mexico with not much food, shelter, or clothing. Monica Barrera lives here in Northwest Indiana and is undertaking an effort to aid the asylum seekers on the border. And she joins me here now on Off Mic. Monica, welcome here.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Well, Monica, first of all, why is this issue important to you?
Quite simply, people are dying. Children are dying. They're right now with MPP, as you know, they get processed and then sent back to Mexico where they await for a court date and things like that. And the area that they're in is called Matamoros, Mexico. So there's no food. There's no water. No bathrooms, nothing, no shelter. So they're left on their own to figure out how to survive. I can give you so many reasons why this is so important to me, but I couldn't give you one reason why it wouldn't be.
Well, Matamoros is right over the border from Brownsville, Texas. Right. We've seen a lot of images on TV. A lot of news is coming out from there. And actually, there's actually a lot of people from Northwest Indiana, from that area of Texas, Laredo. My parents were from that area, a little bit further away, San Antonio. What is it about your background, though, that sort of has you gravitating to this issue?
I mean, it's a number of things, right? My mother and grandparents came from Mexico. They were Mexican immigrants. They had the opportunity to come here to the States and prosper and contribute in a positive way. My siblings, my brother Renee, my sister Cindy, and myself, we are the product of that prosperity. And I think if this had happened, if this was happening 50, 60 years ago, where would we be? You know, this is just so important. I don't want to focus on the fact that I'm a daughter of a Mexican immigrant. I'm looking at it as a human being. These people are not disposable. They're not subhuman.
Now, have you made contact with those on the border or those helping those on the border?
Yes. So you just mentioned that a lot of people from Northwest Indiana come from the Brownsville, Laredo area. My father was born in Brownsville. So my connection to the border has always been there since I was a little girl. My grandmother lived there. I used to go visit. We used to cross the border into Matamoros and have dinner. So I know the area really, really well. And this all started pretty organically. My cousin Leah, my cousin David's wife, Leah, started posting on Facebook about these two gentlemen that started going to the border and cooking for the asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. There's no, like I said, there's no food, no anything. And that kind of snowballed into people volunteering, people donating food. And then it turned into, you know, people needing medical attention. They would try to bring doctors over and try to help. And through that effort, I met Felicia Rangel Zampanaro. She's pretty amazing. She started working with them, crossing the border, trying to distribute clothes and shoes and things like that. Mm-hmm. She has set up a pop-up school on the plaza, and the school is conducted once on Sundays. And she, the thing that's amazing about this is that she has teachers, asylum seekers that were teachers in their countries that are now teaching kids out there in the heat. And it's the one time these children can be children. You know, many of them have never seen the inside of a classroom, and they're now being taught their ABCs and their numbers, and they can finger paint and color. You know, it's pretty amazing. She then introduced me to a woman named Gabby Zavala. Like I said, they bathe in the river, they wash their clothes, they drink the water. And when they bathe there, there's no dignity. You know, it's out in the open, they don't have any clothes on, and it's also very dangerous, right? So what she did is she got together with other organizations and they set up pop-up showers. Mm-hmm. In the campsite next to the plaza. So these people have dignity. They can go in and shower. there's just so many efforts that are going on right now. And the thing about this is that it's such a unique model because it's a direct link to the border. It's they get the donations and they distribute immediately. There's no overhead. There's no salaries to pay. There's just it's going directly to people on the border.
And what are some of the things you're undertaking here in Northwest Indiana?
My main goal is to raise as much awareness about what's happening on the border, how these people are living. You know, there's an estimate of the last estimate we had. There's 150 to 200 babies on the plaza right now. Wow. They have no milk. These mothers are begging for powdered milk. So Felicia and her volunteers, they're trying to go there and distribute this. Many of them don't have diapers. I mean, they have such severe diaper rash. It's just the level of inhumanity is just something that I can't wrap my head around.
Let me ask you this, taking the politics out of this, because it's obviously a hot button issue when you talk about immigration reform or asylum seekers. Have you gotten any either support or even pushback from either family or friends saying, why are you helping these folks on the border? Shouldn't you be focusing on people closer to home? Have you felt that in any way?
No, but I would like to address that. So here in the States, we have welfare, we have food stamps, we have shelters, we have police officers, we have laws, we have all of those safety nets. Granted, they're not perfect by any means. I think what drew me to this issue was that people are just simply dying. They're dying. And I've not gotten any pushback. I've gotten a lot of support. And it's just not in Northwest Indiana. It's different parts where I try to network. You know, the funny thing, last night I was networking again, and this gentleman came and we were talking, and he said, you know, this issue is just so daunting. It's just so big. What can I do about it? And I started telling him about the different ways that he can help. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the conversation, he said, you know, it doesn't seem so hopeless anymore. And it's not. I firmly believe that this is not a hopeless situation.
And we're not, when you talk about hope, we're not talking about somebody opening their pocketbook or giving money, because right away people start to think of scams. But you're talking about more of donations, clothing, physical items that can be sent down to the border to help folks.
So there's different ways that I'd like to address right now. There's one, obviously, the GoFundMe. They feed the people down on the border, right? So you can give donations to that. They also pay doctors to come across the border with people who are so sick. That's fine. People have done that. That's great. The other thing, which I find really really easy to do, there's an Amazon list that lists all the supplies. The powdered milk is on there. The diapers are on there. They need detergent. That's all listed on there. It's shipped to Felicia, and she distributes it right away. What's great about this is she will post it on her Facebook page and say, so-and-so donated this. Look at the pictures. Look at, you know, you see where your donations are going to. The last thing is, if you have clothes, shoes that are in fairly good condition, you can donate that as well. And lastly, you can write your lawmakers, mm-hmm. you know. My hope is that diplomacy is around the corner between the U.S., Mexico, and Central America. But until then, I feel, you know, Americans are the most charitable people in the world. They really are. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a cause that's in someone's heart, they set up a non-for-profit or a foundation or whatever. You know, we can do this together. We can help these people.
Just quickly, real quick, we're running out of time here. How can somebody get a hold of you if they want to reach out to you locally and help in your efforts?
You can reach me. I'm on Facebook, Lily Barrera. I will put down, I'm going to give you the links to where people can donate.
Great.
You know, I'm always available. They can reach through you or through the links that you're going to set up.
Well, Monica Barrera, thank you so much for joining me here on Off Mic.
Thank you so much, and congratulations on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. And coming up, the Bears are with the Queen.
Coming up on the Friday Pitch-In, we'll hear from reporter Justin Hicks on a new apprenticeship program in Elkhart County geared toward high school students. We'll also talk to historian Annalisa Cox on a fascinating but forgotten piece of Indiana history. Her recent New York Times opinion piece is titled, When Anti-Immigration Meant Keeping Out Black Pioneers. We'll also catch up on the biggest Indiana stories of the week with our digital editor, Lauren Chapman, next time on All In.
Tune in today at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
We've learned about slowdowns in manufacturing this week, services too, also global trade, the warning signals, and the rest of the week in this economy next time on Marketplace.
Tune in to All Things Considered at 3, followed by Marketplace at 5:30 and Game Night at 6 on Lakeshore Public Radio.
As you know, our beloved Chicago Bears are in London this weekend to take on the Oakland Raiders. The Bears are 3-1 and are trying to keep up their winning ways, but they'll have to do it without quarterback Mitch Trubisky. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And
here come the Hawks, the mighty.
The Blackhawks opened their new season today. And let's not forget, the Cubs are in need of a new manager, and the Sox, well, the Sox can't wait for next season to start. Joining me to break it all down is veteran Chicago sports journalist Cheryl Ray Stout. Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining us here on Off Mic. Well, tell me, the Chicago Bears are in London. They're getting prepared for Sunday's big match. What can you tell me about this team? Khalil Mack is going to be there, but what about Roquan Smith?
Roquan Smith will be there. He did not play last week because of personal reasons. When we spoke to Roquan, he told us that was it. There was no more missed time. When we talked to Matt Nagy, again, he emphasized it was personal reasons. So no injury that we know of. We don't know of any legal issues. We don't know any personal issues. But we do know that he will be on the field against the Raiders on Sunday.
Now, we do know that Mitch Trubisky is not going to start this game. Chase Daniels is going to, you know, pick up the slack. But, you know, is Mitch Trubisky's injury that bad, or is his ego even worse?
Well, he's got something wrong with his shoulder. They have yet to tell us specifically what it is. But from what Coach Matt Nagy was telling us, they believe not playing on Sunday, then they have the bye week, so he has some time to heal. They don't feel uncomfortable having Chase Daniel in there because the way he performed, you know, against the Minnesota Vikings, they expect him to have that same type of rhythm when he plays against the Raiders. The thing with Mitchell Trubisky, it's not his passing shoulder, it's his other shoulder, so that's actually a better situation. But with a shoulder, you don't want a player to go back in too soon. Could put a harness on him, but we just don't know the extent of it.
So, but there's no question that even if Mitch Trubisky was in there and having a great season, you know, it seems like this team is dominated by the defense, led by, of course, the incredible Khalil Mack. There's a lot of confidence on that side of the ball.
Wait till we see him go against Sunday in London. He's really looking forward to it. He has a smile on his face. He's got a fierce, you know, motor, and he is going to go crazy. And the sad part is, quarterback Carr is one of his favorite, you know, is one of his friends. He's very close to him, but I don't think there's going to be any friendship on the field. But the full defense, what was really great, Michael, on Sunday when they played the Vikings, is that they didn't have Akeem Hicks. They didn't have Roquan Smith. You know, we didn't have some players there. And the second unit, they all stepped in and played well, which says an awful lot by the way that Ryan Pace has assembled this team, that, you know, if you're going to have an injury, and that does happen, you have players that can step in. So that's really important for the Bears. And so when you're a team that's going against the Bears, you know there's not many weaknesses on defense. And I get the feeling, and it's going to start happening because I've seen this before with the Bears, with, you know, with Brian Urlacher and, of course, the championship teams. what happens when a team has this reputation of being just dominant, you see players being intimidated by that. And that's what we may start seeing in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. It's exciting. Now, the Chicago Bears are not the only Chicago team in Europe today or this weekend. You got the Blackhawks playing in Prague in what, less than a couple of hours at 1 o'clock Chicago time. How's it looking for the Blackhawks this season?
Well, it's going to be interesting because they've had some preseason games. They've been in Berlin for several days before they went to Prague. It's going to be interesting watching how Jeremy Colliton uses his goalies, because he has two goalies he could go with. He could go with Corey Crawford or Robin Lanier. So that's going to be interesting. And it's going to be fun to watch the new line makeup, especially the top line. Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane are going to be on the front top line with Alex Nylander. He was traded for Henry Jokiharju. And so with him being gone, and that was a top draft pick, and Alex Nylander was also a top draft pick that didn't perform well in Buffalo. This should be an interesting, you know, to watch that line perform. Because last year, when you really look at what Toews and Kane did, they both had personal best years, but not to make the playoffs. This team is hungry. And it was also good for Jeremy Colliton to have a full training camp. This is his team now. You know, they were starting to feel it at the end of last year. But now you have this full season. They're playing the Flyers. They're a team that's beloved anywhere you go. They have that Yankee type feeling when they go anywhere else. And they've been to Europe before. And I've been told, and I've seen the pictures, there's a ton of Blackhawk fans in Czech. And one of the players, of course, from Slovakia, which is right next door, is Marian Hossa. And there's a lot of love for the Blackhawks because of some of the players they've had on their team.
Well, there's also a ton of Blackhawk fans here in Northwest Indiana over here on Lakeshore Public Radio. But transitioning a little bit, there's a big following, of course, for the Chicago Cubs, who are now looking for a new manager with Joe Madden just being released not even a week ago. Where are they at in their search?
Well, the first thing they did is they did talk to their coaches that they have on their staff, and two of them are on the list. One is Mark Loretta, who was the bench coach who was with the Cubs for this year. Was his first year with the Cubs, but he has a background in the front office when he was with San Diego, former player. The front office of the Cubs, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, know him very, very well. And the other one is venerable. He's up for, he's one of those people being considered too. And David Ross is also on the list. He's been with the organization as, you know, he just helps with the front office on various occasions. In fact, he's the one that scouted Craig Kimbrough. So that's kind of interesting to know, but Theo did mention that they do have a candidate that is in the playoffs. He wouldn't say who it was. They're not gonna tell us when these men are coming in there for interviews. I believe it'll be similar what happened, you know, they'll wait because MLB puts, you know, they have their thumb on it. You can't make announcements until after the World Series or an off day. And so the process may take through the month of October.
Well, and now the White Sox, they just wrapped up, you know, it was a losing season, but they obviously got a little bit better with 72, 73 wins this season. And it looks like they can't hardly wait for next season to start. Are things looking up on the South side?
I think so. Here's a funny story. I was at the Bears and Prince of Mukamura was out with Tim Anderson and Khalil Mack and a couple other guys, and he's excited. You know, when I hear a football player being excited about the White Sox and Tim, you know, Tim Anderson, what he did this year with his .335 batting average, the best in baseball, not just the American League. You know, you see Yoan Makata, he was third best in the American League with his batting average. You've seen that Eloy Jimenez, he was Rookie of the Month for the American League. You've got, you know, Michael Kopech is coming back next year. You have Lucas Giolito, of course, what he did by turning his season around, is basically his career around. And you have James McCann behind the plate, who's a steady influence on this team. There's a lot of terrific parts for this White Sox team. And when you see Lewis Robert will be on this club next year, we'll probably see Nick Madrigal at some point. This would be an interesting team because what what they do need, and Rick Hahn did tell us that the other day, they need two more pitchers on their starting staff. They need a right fielder, and they need a designated hitter. And they need some lefties, both in the rotation and in their lineup. So look at this offseason. It's going to be very exciting to see what they're going to do. And it's going to be very exciting to see how Rick Hahn spends the money, because they do have money to spend, and how this gets done as soon as spring training comes.
And last but not least, the Chicago Bulls are opening training camp. There's some talk that the Bulls are looking towards the playoff as a sort of team goal. Is that even realistic?
You know, it's kind of weird, because it could be, because the Eastern Conference is weaker now when you've got players that are no longer in their, you know, in their conference. Kawhi Leonard is now on the West. You know, you got LeBron James no longer there. So there's an opportunity, if the Bulls can make strides and if they could put things together, they can make a playoff spot. I can't guarantee that, because you never know what happens as far as injuries and stuff go. But the personal development of some of their players, like Lauri Markkanen and, of course, Zach LaVine, the addition, you know, of Coby White, and, you know, there's some real good positives. Tomas Satoransky from Washington, he's going to be a real good point guard for this team. And Wendell Carter Jr., another one that has to make that next step. He had injuries last year. So there's a lot of parts to this team. Will it be a playoff team? I don't know, but it could be close.
You can hear more of Cheryl Ray Stouts reporting on WBEZ in Chicago. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining me here on Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. Okay, welcome back. Are you looking for a good movie to watch? Well, a week from today, Gary will play host to the Gary International Black Film Festival. Several films will be screened, and in just in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to one of the filmmakers. But before we get to her, let's talk with the festival manager, Tony Simpson. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mike. Glad to be here.
Tony, tell me about this film festival. How many movies are there going to be?
Wow, we're screening over a three-day period, approximately 40 films, features, documentaries, shorts, narratives, things of that nature. An exciting time.
And is there a theme for this, or is this sort of just random movies?
Well, they're not. Well, they are random.
Right.
You know, they're covering varied topics, from foster care to the making of The Five Heartbeats with Robert Townsend.
Oh, wow.
We're opening with the film producer of Luke Cage and Sons of Anarchy with his new film, Truth. So there are varied movies there. And we have youth films, one in particular about ride sharing. It's a little scary.
Now, this is the 9th annual film festival. Yeah, how much does it take to put this thing together, and how excited are you for it?
I'm very excited. I'm very tired, but a good tired. dealing with so many filmmakers, producers, the actors, the travel. It takes quite a bit. We have a committed core of volunteers. Actually, there are about 7 of us that are doing this, and we're all across America. The founder, Karen Taring, is out of Seattle, a Gary native. We have another board member that's coming up from out of Atlanta, and then you have the 4 that are on the ground here in Gary, Indiana.
So where are these movies going to be screened?
The movies will be screened at Indiana University Northwest, Berglund Auditorium, Savannah Hall, starting on Friday.
Okay.
October 11th.
October 11th. Any other venues?
Yes. On Wednesday, we have what we call our pre-funk. Now, I'm not familiar with the house DJs, but on Wednesday at Backstage on Broadway, wow, many of those chosen few, the DJs, are coming in with their following, and they are holding a house happy hour. And okay. I think I'm going to try to hang with the millennials on that one.
Okay. I will not try to hang with any millennials. Here's the thing. Okay, now one of those feature filmmakers is Nancy Vasquez. She's the director of a movie called Moth, Matters of the Heart.
Yes.
Nancy's on the phone with us from New Jersey. Hello, Nancy.
Hi.
How are
hey,
you?
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Nancy.
Well, tell us about your film.
Well, my film that I will be that will be in the Gary International Black Film Festival. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Gary. Oh, I really appreciate it. It's going to be Moth, Matters of the Heart. And Moth is a psychological thriller about a woman named Linda Blake who grew up exclusively in the foster care system and was abused by the people that were entrusted to take care of her. Linda systematically goes through abuse. Systematically, she goes and defends herself and takes care of everyone dearly who abused her. But what we learn from Matters of the Heart is that you can still heal and start anew, and that's why she ends up in institution. So Matters of the Heart deals with the foster care system and with mental health.
Well, you know, I saw a trailer on online on it, and we're going to play a little clip from that trailer right now.
Wow, perfect.
Give me my teddy bear now.
Mama Harris, I took care of everyone who ever hurt.
You know, it's got me scared in my boots over here. I'm not sure if I want to watch this or not. But this is an actual full feature film. It's like, what is it, about 85 minutes, Nancy?
Yeah, it's 84 minutes.
84 minutes, mm-hmm. 84 minutes. Now, before we go into further about Moth, you have another movie right now that you can see on Amazon Prime right now. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, The Right to Live. It's about domestic violence, bringing awareness and providing solutions on all types of abuse. And that's in Amazon Prime right now. That deals with my upbringing. I grew up in a domestic violence household. And the biggest thing that I remember, and it's funny because you never really run away from it. You remember like it was yesterday, is never wanting to come back home. That sweating and the fear and the anxiety that came every time I came back home because I had to deal with my father's abuse.
Is that why, I mean, filmmaking is a lot like storytelling. Is that what a reason why you wanted to go into filmmaking?
Yeah. It's amazing because when I was going through the abuse at home, what I did is that I did a lot of after school specials, and one of them was dramatic interpretation, which was acting and making films and directing. And as I got older, I realized that with storytelling, you can make change. And my goal is to change lives through film. And in film, I feel like you have, you just could get a broader audience, a broader platform to make that change.
How do you feel about showcasing your new film, Moth, Matters of the Heart, at the Gary International Black Film Festival?
I am super excited. I mean, it's such a blessing. I thank Tony so much, Tony Simpson, for giving me my opportunity. And one thing about Gary, Indiana, that I was reading, it's a lot of kids there in the foster care system. Mm-hmm. So I think it's right on time. I feel like Gary, Indiana, Chicago, Minnesota, Minneapolis, all the towns and states around there need to come out and watch this film. Yes. Because there's a way to fix this problem. There's a way to bring awareness and provide solutions.
You know, filmmaking is kind of close to my heart because I have a niece, Christina Cortez, who's an award-winning, very young, still filmmaker who's studying film in Chicago. Just won a recent award out of Chicago. And you may have competition in the next few years over this. What do you tell, though, young people who are wanting to go into filmmaking? What do they need to know about filmmaking? It isn't just getting famous, I'm thinking.
No, I think that when you look at it to get famous, it just doesn't happen. It's deeper than that. It has to be a story yearning that you want to tell. You know, filmmaking, you're a storyteller. You know, and you want to get that message across. There's a point that you want to make in your story so people can relate and connect to you. I would say, you know, it's not easy, but it's something that you got to love and have in your soul. And as far as competition, I see it as Ava says, as long as I stay in my own lane, I'm great.
And are you going to come into Gary for your film?
Yes, I am. I will be there. I will be there the 10th, by Thursday.
By Thursday.
I'm super excited about that.
And, you know, film festivals like this, I mean, we know about the Chicago International. There are film festivals everywhere. Mm-hmm. There are the cons and the big ones. What is it about smaller ones like this? Are you thankful for smaller ones like this so you can get your film out there?
Yeah, I'm so grateful for smaller ones like this. I, you know, nothing against big film festivals. We need them all. But I feel like smaller ones like this, you really reach out to the cities and the neighborhoods. And you really have the endearing conversations that mm-hmm. you need to have. I feel like once the festival gets commercialized, that's what it is. And we got to get back to the roots of everything.
Absolutely.
Tony, just getting back real quick locally, what kind of snacks do we have at these movies?
Of course, we have local vendors. We're Popping, which is a new popcorn company mm-hmm. out of Gary. We were trying to be collaborative with many of the up-and-coming businesses there. But our opening night, the entire spread is out. There's crab cakes and lobster and shrimp on the red carpet, you know, and a little libation as well. So I encourage everyone from October 11th through the 13th, come to Indiana University Northwest and enjoy great film, great food, great fun, and meet great friends.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Tony Simpson and Nancy Vasquez for being here on Off Mic, and good luck with the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
In keeping with the arts theme, Nelson Velasquez has been involved in improvisational theater for the last 13 years. He is currently the artistic director of Salsation, a 20-year-old Latino theater company specializing in sketch and improv comedy. Now, Nelson is on a mission to get more Latinos to participate in improv, and Nelson is here on Off Mic in studio with us. How you doing, Nelson?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Fantastic, fantastic. So tell me a little bit about your efforts. What is it about this effort that you want to get more Latinos involved?
Well, I noticed when I moved here in 2011 from Chicago, I noticed that there was a very strong community theater community, but I was looking around and wondering, hey, where's all the improv actors and where are the stand-ups and where are all these other folks that I'm used to seeing in Chicago? And I started seeing that there was a predominantly non-Latino demographic. Is that politically correct for me to say?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I noticed that people of color are hard to find, especially in the community theater scene here in Northwest Indiana. But there's lots of talented actors, choreographers, talent that's just in this area. And having come from Chicago and been part of Salsation for so long, I figured, hey, why not? Let's start building up a coalition of Latinx performers and start putting them together so we could start showcasing some of the talents and some of the things that we have to bring into the community and share it with everybody. You don't have to go to Chicago to get quality theater, to get quality comedy. Stay in Northwest Indiana and check out the people who live next door to you.
Now, I've done a little community theater, in fact, with the Crown Point Community Theater. What is it different about improv? Is it for people almost like me who have a hard time memorizing lines?
Well, I see it kind of like this. If you like theater, it's a different side of the same coin, right? It's just we don't have a script. That's it. It's unscripted theater. So the things that you do when you build the set, hey, we're cheap. We don't have money. So we're going to go ahead and mime everything that we do. You have characters that are in within a play. Hey, we're going to figure out what those characters are as we go along. We come up with the dialogue. So we got the same thing as those people who need to learn their lines. Now, guess what? You make them up as you go along. And there are relationships and things that you care about within a given script. We do that on the fly, and we have techniques to figure those things out. So really, there isn't a true difference between the two. A lot of people think that, oh, improv is just whose line is it anyway, and we're going to make some jokes while we're up there. It's really not. It's really more of the exploration of theater without a script, and the comedy is a byproduct of us figuring out as we go along.
Tell me a little bit about your background again, a little bit of your training or non-training. What have you done in the past?
I have lots of non-training. That's for sure. So I'll give you the Cliff Notes, and for you millennials, that's like Wikipedia for old people.
A dictionary for your really old people.
That's right. So I started in 2005. I went on a business trip. I ended up doing stand-up accidentally for 45 minutes, not knowing that I was doing stand-up, and realizing that in the middle of this business meeting, hey, everybody's laughing, and they're laughing a lot, and I'm enjoying the feeling of this. So I came back to Chicago. I looked up the Second City by accident, took classes there by accident, and through lots of non-training, eventually went through that system, went through a bunch of independent teams, did house teams at all the major theaters in Chicago, and now I am running a company called In Productions LLC out of Northwest Indiana, as well as teaching over at the Second City, and soon branching out into the Indianapolis area to spread the love of improv and get people involved in it.
Don't go down there. There's nothing down there.
I beg to differ.
So where can people get in contact with you to do more improv?
Well, if they are in the Northwest Indiana area or elsewhere, I teach all over the United States and hopefully going international very soon. You can go to Im Productions LLC. That's improductionsllc.com. And you can see a boatload of dates and activities. We have workshops. We have classes. We have showcases. And I'm really looking forward to seeing and reaching out more to the Latinx community here in Northwest Indiana. I really want to bring that to the forefront because I think it's sorely needed.
You know, a couple of years ago at the Lake County Courthouse, I actually participated in one of your productions. Nelson and his troupe were hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Not just saying that.
Thank you.
And they made my participation there just so easy. And they did it where... What was it? You just say sort of a little clip of a storyline.
Yeah.
Or something.
So we give you an idea, and then based off that you tell a story, hopefully a truthful story, and then based off the information that you gave, and I believe it, you had a snap in there that you kept stomping your feet and snapping your fingers. And we use that the entire set, if I remember correctly. Based off that information, you inspire us to develop other scenes that are kind of based loosely off the information you gave us.
Nelson says inspired, but really kind of feels like they're just making fun of you.
Well, your family laughed hilariously. So, yeah.
They do that.
They enjoyed that. They love laughing at you. So,
again, quick. Email address?
Sure. You can reach me if you want to talk to me directly. My name is Nelson, and you can reach me at nelson@improductionsllc.com, or you can call me at 773-828-9117.
Do you have any upcoming events you want
to? Sure. Sure. We've got a ton of them. We are going to be going down to Grand Rapids in Michigan. Actually, I guess up there, aren't we? Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're going to be doing showcases out there for the Grand Rapids Improv Festival. And locally, we will be doing a series of shows, but the most important show that I want to push is we're doing a Halloween show October 26th at Courage Court Pizza in Crown Point, Indiana, 8 o'clock, and it's going to feature a musical improv team, a high school improv team from Crown Point High School, and our short form team, Like Whose Line Is It Anyway. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I know you want more Latinos involved, but you're just kind of a general call for anybody who also wants to get involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But me being Latino, I know we need a personal invitation just to come out and participate.
Mi gente, por favor. Bien para Courage Corps Pizza. Octubre, el 26 de octubre. Y me gustaría ver más Latinos en impro. Gracias.
Okay, well, that's all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed this very first show of Off Mic with me, Michael Puente. I want to thank all of my guests and the fine folks here at Lakeshore Public Radio for giving me the opportunity, along with producers Dee Donson and Jose Rodriguez, along with James Muhammad, Tom Maloney, Chris Nolte, and Sharon Jackson. You can catch me the rest of the week on WBEZ, but for Off Mic is every Friday from 11 to noon. You can also hear it on the iTunes app or at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great weekend.